Those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com. Welcome to the voice behind the show for actors who are heard but not seen, which might be a good thing in this particular case. We're talking with Mark Meer, and I'm not saying he's unattractive, but judging by his Twitter picture, he's got something wrong with his hands.
Those were surgically altered.
Well, I was going to say, do you find it difficult as an actor to get work being disabled like that? And is that why you went into voice acting?
I like to think of it as differently abled. For those of you who aren't looking at my Twitter picture, my hands are large and white and puffy and have three fingers and a thumb. They may just be costume gloves. I don't want to give too much away.
The only way to find out is by checking out the Twitter account, which is just, it's just Mark Meer, right?
Mark_Meer.
Mark_Meer and yes. M-E-E-R.
Yes. Yeah. And Mark with a K. I just joined Twitter a few months ago, actually. It was in October, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay. How are you enjoying it so far?
Oh, sure. It's just like another Facebook.
Just with a few less videos.
Yes, yeah. And, well, not always. It's, I resisted Twitter for a long time, obviously. I was just like, I don't actually usually carry a cell phone when I'm not traveling. So I'm sort of like, why would I join Twitter? And now it's just, something part of the morning routine. You go, you check Twitter, you check Facebook, you check your email. Just another little check mark for the list. And I do have to say I have enjoyed communicating directly with fans on Twitter. That's probably the greatest advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. Now you're based in Edmonton.
I am.
And you're actually much more a live actor, I guess would be one way to put it. In fact, you're a fairly regular staple of the Edmonton improv scene, which doesn't sound like it would be that impressive, but in doing the research, that it seems to be quite the place for improv.
Edmonton is quite the place for improv. It's one of the reasons I live here, actually. We've got a fantastic improv scene. Rapid Fire Theater is the local improv theater company. And it's currently based out of the Varscona Theater, which is also the home to Dynasty, the live improvised soap opera. I've been a member of that for coming up on 20 years. And we celebrated our 20th season of Dynasty and the 30th anniversary of Rapid Fire Theater. And for both those events, our friend and alumni Nathan Fillion actually came and played. So yes, we do have some rather famous alumni. Also Ron Peterson from Mad TV. You may remember him from Mad TV. Currently with National Theatre of the World in Toronto, doing very well. So yeah, it really is an amazing town, not just for improv, but for theatre as well. It, I believe, still has the most theatre per capita of any city in North America. And of course, we have the Fringe Festival here, which is the largest fringe theatre festival in North America, and I believe second in the world, second only to Edinburgh, the original one.
Now, once a festival gets big enough, can you still call it fringe? Or is it just the thing at that point?
Well, that's the thing. The original Edinburgh Fringe Festival is literally a fringe festival. There's many other festivals going on. There's a big Shakespeare festival at the time, and so the Fringe Festival is on the fringe. In North America, with fringe festivals, the fringe is actually the show. It's the main attraction. But the name is stuck, so I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
Going back to Dynasty, you are one of the, I believe, two record holders for the big Dynasty marathon improv session. You're holding the record at 53 hours. Is that correct?
The shows themselves have actually been scaled back to 50 because we were just going very late on the Sunday night of that weekend. I should explain that the Soapathon is an annual fundraising event for Dynasty, the live improv soap opera. And basically what every September, it's usually the weekend after Labor Day weekend, we do a 50-hour long show. It has been up to 53 hours in the past. And a lot of the actors do it without sleep. And I was the first person to attempt to do the entire thing without any sleep breaks whatsoever. And since then, many, many others have joined me, many of my colleagues. And I think I am the one who's done it the most. There's one coming up in London. Some English performers, actually, and friends of ours came and did ours and decided to bring it over to London. So it'll be the fifth annual London Improvathon this May, which is, I believe, the 11th to the 13th at a venue called Hoxton Hall in London, which is an old Victorian music hall, actually. And that'll be my 20th time all the way through.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So it's quite an experience.
Is the first one scarier than the last one? Like where do they fit?
Well, essentially, it gets a lot easier. The first time I did it, it was a very grueling experience. I suffered hallucinations, paranoia, all the things that go with sleep deprivation. But I think gradually over the years, as I say, this will be my 20th time all the way through, that's sort of fallen away. And while you do still get extremely tired, you don't hit that wall of near insanity anymore. I kind of miss the hallucinations, though.
Do you have to train for that? Like a marathoner, you just stay up for days at a time in preparation?
It's probably good to actually do the opposite and get as much sleep and good food in you as you can before doing that. And we also have constant food sponsorship throughout the event. So every 2 hours, there's a 15-minute intermission for the audience and the performers, and you just try to eat constantly. Staying hydrated is very important. And actually, caffeine is not a good thing really to rely on. You should, have your cup of coffee at the time of day that you normally would, but don't use it to stay awake at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Now, like I said, you started as a theater actor and an improv guy, and you've since made the transition, at least somewhat, to doing voice acting, specifically with video games. How did that happen? Like, was that planned, or was it just kind of, here's this opportunity, let's go for it, or how did that work out?
Well, I mean, I haven't really ever had another job besides acting. So when you are an actor and you're making your living at it, you're going to auditions for all sorts of things. You're doing commercials, you might do some stage work, you do radio work. And this was just another audition when I first worked for BioWare. It was for a single line at the end of Baldur's Gate 2, Shadows of Om, where I played an evil cleric. And I was literally in the final cutscene. You had to beat the entire game to hear my one line. And I actually did try. I was playing through the game, and of course, I was hoping to see my final line. And my roommate's computer crashed. That's what I was playing it on. And he had many other more important things on his computer than my save file. So yeah, I didn't ever get to finish that game. I've seen it subsequently on YouTube. But essentially, that one line with BioWare led to all my future work with them, because they just kept calling me back. The next thing they cast me in was Baldur's Gate 2, The Throne of Baal, and I got to play Cyric, the god of murder, in that. And that was a real thrill for me, because I was a Dungeons & Dragons player and I'd read Forgotten Realms books. And so getting to play an established character within that universe was a lot of fun. And I think the fact that I was a Dungeons & Dragons player and, a bit of a nerd myself kind of helped get me called back to BioWare, because, they could call me in for things like, Hordes of the Underdark, the Neverwinter Nights games, and tell me, okay, this guy's a 15th level paladin, and I'd be able to go, oh, so he's lawful good, and he probably has a Holy Avenger by now. They'd be, yes, okay, good. So I think that shorthand helped.
And you've done almost all of your work in the voice acting world with BioWare.
For video games, yeah, almost exclusively with BioWare. I've done other voice gigs, certainly. I was the voice of the Family Channel here in Canada for a while, like the station identification voice.
So do they know they had the God of Murder doing the voice for the Family Channel?
Well, you're an actor, you wear a lot of hats, sometimes a god of murder, sometimes the friendly voice telling you that So Raven is coming up next after these messages.
I think I might actually want the god of murder to be telling me that. I don't know why.
Yes.
There's something there.
That's So Raven.
So what was it like to go from that single line, and that was, let's see, Baldur's Gate 2, that was what, 2000?
Mm-hmm.
To heading a major franchise just a few years later. I believe that was about 6 years later.
Well, as I say, my work with BioWare just sort of kept increasing in volume, from a single line to, in an actual role with a name. And I worked on pretty much all of their games, I think, subsequent to that. I did a lot of demo work on the original Knights of the Old Republic. And I was in Jade Empire and other games subsequent to that. And when I got cast as Commander Shepard, I was actually already working on the project. They'd called me in to develop alien sound sets for the various alien species. Like, what is the sort of base sound of the Salarians, for example, or the Krogan. And some of it's fairly obvious in that, you know, Krogans will have guttural deep voices because of the way they look. But it really was at the concept stage. So I was just working from early concept drawings of, you know, the facial structure of the aliens, what their culture was like, that sort of thing. So I guess I'm the reason why Salarians speak rapidly and have that sort of tone of voice. And, you know, came up with the Vorcha. Vorcha, I guess, came later. I actually play all the Vorcha. But the Volus, actually, I meant to say. You know, they're sort of wheezing sound effect and that sort of thing. I was just working on the project already, and they asked me to audition for the lead. And I didn't really think there was any hope of getting it. I figured, well, we both know that I'll just be doing some aliens as per usual. But I was very pleasantly surprised to get called back and then eventually be cast as Commander Shepard.
Going back to the alien, the concepting, what is that process like? I think that's something that a lot of fans kind of assume that's done by writers and maybe with some input from the art department, but that seems to be primarily the purview, I guess, of writers. Is that a common thing where they bring in actors to help flesh out even the concept levels of a game or an animated series or anything like that?
Well, in this case, yeah, they did. I mean, this was an idea. Obviously, you were working with all the stuff the writers gave you. But they wanted somebody to be able to sort of just to actually demonstrate what all the alien races would sound like. So it's one thing to see it on paper, and it's another thing to have an actor bring it to life. And so that's basically what they brought me in for. Initially, it was also just to play with different ideas for what the various alien races could sound like. There were some, I remember early initial ideas that the Turians would actually sort of have like a clicking sound in their voice just because of their facial structure. But, you know, some things got abandoned because it's like, that might just get hard to listen to after a while. And so they decided to do the Turians mostly with a filter. But I'm pretty sure that all actors, I play a fair number of Volus in the games, but all the other actors that do as well have to do that sound themselves.
That's not just you looped in there?
No, I don't think so. I think they had to do their own inhaling effects.
Do you get paid for every single Volus that you do, or is it just one Volus bulk payment?
You generally get paid when working in video game voiceover by the hour. So often we would tack additional characters onto the end of sessions where I was recording Shepard dialogue, especially with the Vorcha. Those had to be saved for the very end. Because, of course, they do tend to be a little hard on the vocal cords, and you're not going to sound exactly the same right after screaming and screeching for 15 straight minutes.
With the alien voices, like you mentioned, with the Turians, there's a filter, and several of the other voices, I know Vorcha, I believe, have a filter of some sort. Does that change kind of what you're going for in terms of, like, how much do you have to change your performance based on knowing that there will be a filter there?
I knew what the filters were. I'm not sure if they necessarily let the other actors who play aliens listen to a filtered voice first or not. But I think they probably have at least, you know, samples of what the various alien races sound like, so that an actor going in will know how to tailor their performance.
Now, you play the male Shepard, which...
On my playthroughs, yes, I do. I'm clearly a complete narcissist. Also, I want to see my renegade takes, and I want to see my paragon takes. As I mentioned, I am a geek myself, so getting to play the game where I am the main character, it's pretty fun. It's pretty good. It's a pretty unique experience, I guess.
No, we asked Jennifer Hale this last week, and we asked, do you enjoy listening to yourself in a game like that? Now, and she had said, since she's not much of a gamer, it was a little more kind of nerve-wracking for you. As more of a gamer, are you a little more used to that, hearing yourself in a game? Or
I guess so. I mean, you know, I did a lot of tabletop RPGing as well, so I guess I'm used to hearing my own voice going through adventures like Dungeons and Dragons and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, I think I know what Jen's talking about as well, and it is very hard for any actor to watch a recorded performance of themselves. I don't know any actor who can, you know, watch anything they've done, like whether it be on television or film or even an archival video of a play or something like that, that you'll watch your performance and go, I wouldn't change a thing. That is perfect. Excellent. And yeah, I know Jennifer's talked about that it's just, oh, she, you know, when she hears it, she just wants to go back and fix things and change things. But yeah, It is also a unique experience for me playing the game because I'm privy to a lot of plot details because I've recorded all the dialogue for all the eventualities. And it may have been months since we've recorded something, but when I'm playing through the game, I'll start a mission and then remember all the possible ways it could end. And in other interviews, I've kind of compared it to being Dr. Manhattan. just knowing exactly what is in store in all possible futures and still going through it. But it is fun. And in some ways, it's more, I guess, straight up fun for me. In some ways, like, you know, Mass Effect games are sort of like reviewing my work. But it's more straight up fun for me to play something like a Dragon Age game where I can encounter myself as a villain and then kill myself and then move on without knowing exactly what's going to happen next.
I think that's an interesting aspect of psychological thinking there. I think Freud would have some interesting things to say.
Yes. Unlike Dr. Manhattan, I do wear pants when I'm gaming. Yes.
Well, you know, not everyone's perfect, I guess. Now, the Shepard character and just the Mass Effect series is, you know, very serious, very, you know, very, I guess depending on how you look at it, very tragic. But you, as in your regular day, I guess, and in your live action and your improv stuff, it tend to be more comedic. It was that, like, how big of a change was that, and how much, basically, how many hours of Shepard goofing off are there recorded that no one will ever hear?
there's probably a fair number. We developed a fair number of in-jokes, and occasionally we'd do a take just for the entertainment of whoever was editing it. At a certain point, we kind of had to scale back on that because there was a concern. It's like, you know, somebody might slip up, and this might end up in the game. So, there was plenty of that.
Well, hey, you know, BioWare always looking for DLC options. If you could have basically the funny version of Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, well, but the thing is that there's also lots of little in-jokes built into the game. And it's, you know, it's a fairly serious and it's even bleak game because you're dealing with the potential extinction of humanity and whatnot. But there, it's nice that there's these little jokes embedded just for if you're looking for them. You can ignore them if you choose not to. But, you know, the I'm Commander Shepard and this is my favorite store on the Citadel sort of thing, the endorsing of every single product you run across. Things like Blasto, you know, the Hanar Spectre cereal. And I should mention I play Blasto too. So it's always fun to get to do those little gags within the game. Because, as you mentioned, I am a comedy guy. Though, I mean, I do dramatic acting as well on stage.
Oh, with all of the characters that you're doing, how much of Mass Effect 3 can people hear you in? I mean, it sounds like pretty much at any moment you risk hearing you.
Well, again, any Vorcha you run across in any of the games is going to be me. Blasto. I think pretty much all of the Hanar, actually. Many Volus. A few random Turians. A wounded Krogan. I know that. I did a few Krogan here. That was in Mass Effect 2. Let me see. Who else? Praza. Do you remember Praza? He was a Quarian that you encounter on the mission in Mass Effect 2 where you actually get her back on the squad. He was a Quarian who he rushes ahead and doesn't trust Cerberus, and he ends up getting his squad killed by a mech.
I vaguely remember that, yeah.
Yeah. So that was me doing, you know, a sort of Slavic Eastern Europe. Well, actually, just mimicking Tali's accent.
Being the huge geek that you are, we'll get to specific aspects in a little bit.
Sure.
But you are, I read an article about how you acted in a live action fan movie for Mass Effect 3.
Yes, actually, that was a project by the University of Advancing Technology in Arizona. And their instructor, Paul DeNegris, contacted me, and he sent me a copy of the script. And I liked it. It was a lot of fun. And beyond that, it's like the entire purpose of this project is, of course, the education of these students and to showcase their digital effects work. And so I wanted to be involved if I could. And it took a little bit of looking for a hole in my schedule. And they were very kindly willing to put off shooting for a couple of months. And I love everything that I've seen from it so far. I mean, these students are really talented. I'm not sure if you've seen the teaser.
I have not. No, I literally just saw the article like 5 minutes before we started recording. So
yeah, there's a teaser up on YouTube. If you get a chance to look at it, basically, you know, it's me. I'm featured in it. But I was standing in a blank green room, so everything that you see besides what I'm holding was created by the students. And yeah, I think it's going to be really fun. They've done another film called Fallout that was pretty good, quite entertaining. Some very, very good FX shots in there.
Now, is that based on the game as well, or is that a coincidence?
It's not directly based on the game, but it's set in a similarly post-apocalyptic setting. There's an effect shot you'll know when you see it where someone gets killed in a very interesting fashion.
Aha. We'll throw links to the teaser in the show notes for this. Do you know when the full thing is going to be released?
Well, it's a school project, so I was thinking the end of the semester, but I guess the latest I've heard is that they're aiming for summer.
Okay, yeah, I mean, you did this pretty recently. I mean, you did that.
Yeah, this was just a few months ago. This was in January. And of course, you know, we shot it over the course of 3 days with me, and it's going to be a short film. It's only going to be about 10 minutes long, but there's a massive amount of post-production involved in this, obviously, because it was shot almost entirely on green screen.
And are you the lead, or are you just a cameo?
I'm one of the leads. I'm playing Colonel John Grissom, actually.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, who you may be familiar with from the supplementary Mass Effect materials, and it was a fun concept actually that the writer Caleb came up with. He directed as well, and he basically has a male and a female officer, and one has a very renegade attitude, and one has a very paragon attitude, and they're sort of the main characters of this story.
Sweet, and I believe it's called Red Sand.
Red Sand, yes.
Yep.
Of course, is a reference to the drug Red Sand from the Mass Effect series. And it's a set, let's see, about 40 years, I believe, before the first Mass Effect game.
Okay.
So it's at the point where humanity is just discovering the Prothean technology on Mars. So they haven't actually made the leap forward yet. There's no FTL. There hasn't been first contact with the Turians or any alien races yet. So the Mass Effect universe is a slightly different place, and you'll see that reflected in like the equipment and whatnot. They're less technologically advanced than we've been used to.
All right. Now, and this is not your first time dressing up for various things. You're apparently quite the accomplished cosplayer as well. I've seen a couple of your outfits. Is it okay to call them outfits? I don't even know what the
costumes, man. I'm a guy who likes Halloween. I mean, that's how I started starting amassing costumes was just, you know, every year I'd make or get my more talented friends to help me make a costume of some kind. And as I say, I'm a nerd, so I tend to lean towards the comic book influenced ones, particularly supervillains.
And yeah, Marvel.com's got your Doctor Doom.
Yes, yeah, actually they just did a little interview with me a little while ago about that. And so I basically it started with Halloween costumes. We also Rapid Fire Theater, who I mentioned earlier. I produce and direct the annual Halloween show that we do. And if you've seen theater sports, it's sort of competitive improv. For the Halloween show, we theme it. And for the last few years, we've been doing superheroes versus supervillains. And so it's in full costume and in character, but playing theater sports games. If you haven't seen theater sports, Whose Line Is It Anyway? The improv show is a good point of reference. And so we did, you know, Marvel and DC versions. We did the Justice League versus the Legion of Doom, the Avengers versus the Masters of Evil. We did a U.S. versus Canada match, actually, which was we started getting really obscure. We did the Invaders, which is the World War II U.S. team that Captain America led, versus Alpha Flight, which is the Canadian superhero team that Wolverine used to be part of.
So which one were you in Alpha Flight? I don't see you as much of a Sasquatch.
No. I was Guardian, actually.
Okay.
The guy with the sort of Canadian equivalent of Captain America in the Marvel Universe.
Nice.
And we did have a Sasquatch, yeah, that took some doing, lots of white fun fur. we did the white version because it's a lot easier to find white fun fur than orange fun fur.
Now, do you do a lot of your own costuming, or do you leave it for other people?
Well, that's the thing. As we've gotten more obscure, just by necessity, it's like you can't actually buy Alpha Flight costumes off the rack.
What? Not even in Canada?
Not even in Canada. And so, yeah, just by necessity, we've had to make a lot of costumes. I don't sew myself. I do like some painting and gluing and that sort of thing, and things that don't require the use of a needle and thread, because I'm hopeless at it. Fortunately, you know, I work in theater, so we know plenty of talented seamstresses and costume designers. They can help with that. Also, more recently, I started going to cons. Like I've been to Dragon Con, I think, every year since 1998, but only recently have I been able to go for the whole weekend. And I had this big pile of superhero, and or rather, mostly for me, supervillain costumes, and thought, yeah, you know, I like getting drunk as a supervillain at Halloween parties. Why not try it for 3 days? And that's what Dragon Con is like. It's like a big beer fest and nerding out, really.
So you go to these conventions as a civilian? You don't go as Mark Meer, voice of Mass Effect?
No, with Dragon Con, I've never been as a guest. I've gone as a private nerd over the last decade. But more recently, I've started doing conventions as a guest. My first one was EXP Con, which was in Florida. And Ryan Sweat, the organizer of that, actually arranged for both Jennifer Hale and I to be there, so both Commander Shepherds. And that was the first time I'd met Jennifer face-to-face. We'd spoken on the phone a few times, but that was the first time that we'd actually met. And she's fantastic. She's such a great lady. Subsequently, we met up in Los Angeles. My wife and I went for dinner with her and her husband. And my wife and I actually discovered, my wife and she discovered that they had a shared love of horseback riding. So we ended up going over to Jennifer's house one day, and they went riding. And so it's the convention circuit is amazing. And even before I was being a guest, I'd see Dragon Con, Mass Effect costumes that were immaculate. You know, weapons that light up and armor that could easily be on screen. The most recent one that I've done is MegaCon, and that was also in Florida, in Orlando, just last month. And that was also a lot of fun.
Now, do you pick Florida just to get away from the Edmonton winter? Is that?
It's just turned out that both the conventions that I've done so far have been in Florida, but the timing was fortuitous. It's always nice to get a little bit of sun in the middle of winter. And the next one I'm doing is actually here in Canada. It's the Calgary Comic Expo.
I've actually heard that that's one of the bigger ones. Is that?
It's quite impressive. I'd signed on and went, oh, yes, of course, I'll go to Calgary. I'll go to a close convention. And I had been intending to go for a number of years, but I always seem to be busy that weekend, have a gig or whatnot. And this year, just looking at the guest list, they've got the entire Next Generation cast, the entire Bridge.
Wow.
Yeah, they have Stan Lee is going to be there, Adam West. We've had a number of people from The Walking Dead, Katie Sackhoff from Battlestar Galactica, Robert Englund, the original Freddy Krueger. So, yeah, it's quite a star-studded cast. So I look forward to possibly hanging out in the same green room as some of those people at some point.
Now, we mentioned that all of your voice acting stuff, at least for video games, have been through BioWare, which is a Canadian company. Is that based in Edmonton, or is that?
Okay. Yes, BioWare has their main.
They do. Office. Okay.
Yeah, they're based in Edmonton. They used to be quite close to my house, but before they became the huge success that they are, in the early years when I was doing Baldur's Gate 2 stuff, I was doing it, a 15-minute walk from my house. So that.
So they weren't doing auditioning by just yelling out the window.
No, they put out calls and.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, it just worked out well.
Now, that's the only company you've worked on or worked with so far. Is that, like, why is that? I guess would be the best way to put it. Is it out of a sense of just kind of homebodiness, or is that you're busy doing other stuff? Or
I am fairly busy. Like, that's the thing. I haven't really been looking for work for a while. It's just the projects keep cropping up. And I write a lot of my own stuff, so that's also fun to be able to get to write and produce your own stuff. There's a radio show here in Canada, a national sketch comedy show called The Irrelevant Show, which is on CBC Radio, and I write and perform for that. So I guess that is a voice gig, too. It's a radio gig.
Absolutely.
Yes. And I've also got a television show called Caution May Contain Nuts. It is on television, but don't get excited. It's only on Canadian television. but we are actually on YouTube now. We've been posting sketches from that. We're on APTN here in Canada and Byte TV. But you can obviously see us worldwide on YouTube. The YouTube channel for that is Nuts on TV.
And that wasn't taken before now?
I'm surprised it wasn't taken. If you Google that, you might not be happy with the results.
It may take a couple pages to find what you were looking
for. It might be. But yes, that's our YouTube channel. And for the Irrelevant Show, you can actually download entire episodes and sketches. We're available as a free podcast. And you can go to cbc.ca/irrelevant show, and we're also available on iTunes.
All right, and we'll throw links to all that stuff in the show notes as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I can actually send you a couple of sketches.
Oh, perfect.
From Caution May Contain Nuts. The ones that I write tend to be of a fairly geeky flavor. Dungeons and Dragons, supervillains, that kind of thing.
Okay, now it's time to challenge your geekiness here.
Yeah, oh, I see.
All right. So tabletop board game, or tabletop role-playing games. What have you done?
Every tabletop role-playing game that I've played?
Throw some names. Name drop systems to prove your cred.
Well, Dungeons and Dragons, both basic and expert. Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. Advanced Dungeons and Dragons 2nd Edition, 3rd Edition. I never actually played 3.5, but I did buy some of the rule books. GURPS, a lot of GURPS, actually. Almost every variety of GURPS you would care to mention. Long-time GURPS Supers campaign, actually, that I quite enjoyed. Let's see. Going back... In its early days, actually, Vampire the Masquerade and Werewolf the Apocalypse. If you go back far enough, I think I did play Boot Hill and Gamma World. I'm fairly old.
So. Wow, Boot Hill. Yeah. I haven't heard that referenced on something in a while.
Yeah. Oh, no, actually, it was way back, in my junior high days. It was there was a system where you could convert Dungeons and Dragons characters into Boot Hill and vice versa. So I believe the DM. Yeah, a DM took us through, a portal in time, and we ended up in the Old West. And
and that became Deadlands.
Yes. And actually, speaking of that sort of game or variety of game, I actually was quite into Ravenloft, which is sort of an offshoot of Dungeons & Dragons, sort of more horror-based and vampires, werewolves, that kind of thing, ghosts, demons. Let's see, what else? I think those are the main ones that I play. Oh, Mutants and Masterminds! I picked up the book of that. A friend of mine gave that to me, so I've read that. I am the sort of geek that even though I haven't had time for a regular RPG in tabletop RPG in quite a while, I still pick up rule books and read them just to see what's going on. Oh, and I should mention that we've started doing a show, actually, with Rapid Fire Theater. It's based on a show some friends of ours in Winnipeg do, Improv Dungeons & Dragons. And so it's basically playing Dungeons & Dragons on stage for an audience with costumes and whatnot, and playing it for humor, clearly.
So is it basically LARPing on stage?
In a sense, yeah. The guys in Winnipeg have a different format. And, of course, I checked with them. They're friends of ours. And we said we wanted to try to do our own version. So I sort of spearheaded that. And I wanted to make our version, the Rapid Fire Theater version, as much like actual Dungeons & Dragons as possible. So I play the Dungeon Master. And I'm in, a black robe, but something, fairly neutral. And I do exactly what a Dungeon Master would do, which is play everyone that the player characters encounter, whether it's townspeople or the nobleman who gives them their mission, and then all of the monsters and mentors and whatnot, and then all the characters are in full costume with weapons and all their equipment and any magic items and stuff like that. And we went to the trouble of actually rolling up the characters old fashioned with 3 6-sided die, and it worked out really well, actually. Just by luck of the rolls, the guy who was playing the wizard ended up, or magic user, I should say, because I think we're using first edition rules, ended up with like a 6 strength and a 6 constitution, and yeah, it's perfect.
It's as it should be.
Yeah. And, all the guys just play, and ladies, just play their alignments to the hilt. And that really leads to hilarious scenes on stage.
And that can only be seen on stage?
Yes, currently we're only seen on stage. There's another show I do called The Herald of Galactus, which is a superhero improv show. Actually, I just did one of those shows last night. That's a show I developed with my friend Chris Craddock, and we're both big comic book nerds. So basically what we do is we create a superhero with the audience, and we take the audience through their entire career out of order, as if you were reading just random issues of comic books. So, say you had a big stack of Superman comics, and you'd read one from the 1950s, and then maybe one from the late 80s, and then you read one from like a World War II one. And so it's just jumping around in time within that character's publication history. And again, these aren't we're not doing them with established characters. We're making up completely new characters with the audience. And you can actually see that on YouTube. I believe a show that we did at the General Fools Festival last year up here in Canada has been posted on YouTube. If you just search for Herald of Galactus, and I should mention it's Herald the name, H-A-R. Yes, yeah. That's a little bit of a pun that, if you know both improv and comics, is hilarious. The Herald is a long-form improv format that was created by a gentleman named Del Close, who was extremely, extremely influential in the development of improv. And Galactus is, of course, based on The Guy Who Eats Planets, created by Stanley and Jack Kirby.
So it's a double in-joke.
It is.
That's anytime you can get that, anytime you can pull that off, you pretty much have to, I think. So
I can't take credit for that name. Chris came up with that one.
Yeah, but we don't have to tell him. He won't listen to the show anyway.
Credit where credit is due.
So aside from all the live stuff you're doing, where can people see you or hear you in the near future?
Well, as I mentioned, there's Caution May Contain Nuts, and sketches are currently being posted. They've aired now in Canada, so they're all right to be posted on the net. And you can go to cbc.ca/irrelevant show to hear complete sketches and full episodes of The Irrelevant Show. And if you happen to be in London in May 11th to 13th, I'll be at the 2012 London Improvathon at Hoxton Hall. And I'm actually quite looking forward to this one. The setting, of course, changes every year in different characters. But I'll be playing Hades, because it's going to be set at the first Olympics in ancient Greece. And so some of us are going to be playing Greek gods.
You seem to like big, angry characters.
I think so, yeah, maybe. Yeah, I like the bad guys. I admire their fashion sense. I'm a big Halloween fan.
Obviously.
Yes.
Well, along those lines, and this is something we ask of everyone, and we'll make this the last question, even though every time I say that we end up with three more, but whatever. We're going to go with it. Okay. Favorite role you haven't been able to do yet?
Favorite role I haven't. Interesting. Now, are we talking in film, television?
Could be anything.
All right. I'm going to say Dr. Victor Von Doom.
You think you can do that better than what has been already done yet?
Well, there've been some good Doom performances turned in, but Dr. Doom is probably one of my favorite characters. I tend to lean towards the villains. I was the kid whose favorite Star Wars character was Darth Vader, who liked Cobra Commander, that sort of thing. So Dr. Doom to me is the ultimate villain. And although I have actually played him on stage in those Halloween shows that you talked about, mm-hmm. and I do have my own set of Dr. Doom armor.
All right. And again, we'll throw that in. This will be a link-filled show notes, because you are, for someone, at least as far as the voice acting world is concerned, you don't have the resume of like a Jennifer Hale. You're all over the place on the web.
I do have to say, very few people have as extensive and impressive a resume as Jennifer Hale. That was one of the things that impressed me most about getting cast, was that I would be playing opposite Jennifer Hale as the other half of Commander Shepard, because I was a fan of hers even before I worked with her, from other games, and especially from cartoons. Like, I watch a lot of Justice League Unlimited, and of course she appears in that quite a bit. So yeah, it was quite thrilling to get cast opposite her.
Well, all right, if you want to hear Mark pretty much for hours upon hours, you can check out the Mass Effect series, but you can also check him all throughout Canada. We're just going to say he's all over the place in Canada. He's on radio, he's on TV, he's on YouTube, he's everywhere. So if you can't find him, it's really your fault, frankly.
I am like the snow. I am everywhere in Canada.
That's right. Well, thanks a lot for talking with me, Mark.
Not at all, Evan. Thanks for having me on.
This has been The Voice Behind, a production of the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network. Tune in every Wednesday for a new episode, and for outtakes from this and other episodes, as well as news and commentary from the voice actor community, follow our Twitter feed at twitter.com/thevoicebehind or on Facebook at facebook.com/thevoicebehind. Comments, questions, and suggestions are more than welcome at voice@fancypantsgangsters.com. Thanks so much for listening.